Super Bowl! It felt nice to win, didn't it? Holy Toledo. On a very tough morning, the day ended wonderfully in the afternoon. I don't know if there was a dry, I don't think there was a dry eye in the radio booth. It was an extremely tough morning for all of us yesterday. It's been a difficult weekend, to say the least. It was a wonderful moment for Browns fans far and wide. And I don't know where the rest of the season goes. I don't know if there's more drama to come and all the other things. I'm sure eventually it'll catch up with us. But boy, it was nice yesterday. It was nice to get the win. It was nice to feel the way that we felt. It was nice to see everybody just so emotional and so happy to see that win and to see everything go the way it went. And I'm seeing the picture of Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry bringing Jim's family the game ball from yesterday. It's just a wonderful thing for everybody. And I'd say everybody involved, but I think everyone was involved. Every Browns fan worldwide was involved yesterday and carrying a heavy heart into the game, and certainly very excited and very happy, not just for the win, but obviously on a day where, boy, it was therapeutic and we needed it.
And it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah.
We finally had a Browns game. Whether they I would have said it win or lose, by the way. No one would want to hear it if we end up losing on the last second, you know, Lamar Jackson scenario. But it was fun. And it felt like everybody was actually having fun. We could break down a game again. We could talk about decisions. We could talk about big plays. We could talk about receivers that have been unheralded up to this point in their careers. And it was just fun. And Chubb looked a little more like Chubb. Offensive line looked a little more like Brown's offensive line. You had guys flying around on defense, some of which you didn't even know who they were. And they were flying around on defense. It was just an awesome, awesome afternoon. And I'm so jealous of the people that got to take that one in live. I mean, what, Owen, you said tickets were down to $25?
29 is what I saw 2 hours before kickoff.
But what a game. What a game to be at. The weather was perfect. Yeah. I saw some guy in the upper deck had his shirt off at one point there when the cameras went to him. It was just awesome. Everything about it was awesome.
It was interesting. I heard during the broadcast, Tom McCarthy did a great job on TV. I know that we have a little bit of a relationship here in Cleveland with him. He did the preseason games for a couple of seasons. But they did a wonderful presentation yesterday. And we'll play that here in a second. I saw the tribute to Jim. But it was interesting because they said that, you know, they talked to Nick Chubb before the game and he said he didn't know how the fans were going to react. And I'm thinking, well, they're mad at you. It doesn't mean they don't love you. And they might be mad, and they were mad. And I do think that people going into the stadium because of the news of Jim's passing on Saturday, I think that did change how people were feeling headed into the stadium yesterday. I saw the billboards, electronic billboards up and down the highways. I know it was on 480 and 77, so I imagine it was over on 71 and 90 coming into the tributes to Jim. Everything in the stadium, the moment of silence, everything there. I think it changed. And to see the win, it was great. But I'm sitting there thinking, well, they're mad. It doesn't mean they don't love you. They've been mad at you, and they were mad at you last week, certainly, that whole rigmarole that was going on. But it was nice to see. It looked like a full house. Looked like everybody. Most of the people were wearing orange. I only saw a few Ravens fans, to be honest with you. Maybe I saw some. Maybe some people saw different from me. I know that's always been a conversation. But I thought it was just a wonderful day. And that was something that was really sad. Really sad. So, you know, talking about Jim and his passing, I got texted Saturday in the afternoon. It didn't set in with me. It was probably just past noon. It didn't really set in with me until the team made the announcement, and then it was a little bit overwhelming when I got the notice on my watch. It was that he had passed. But yesterday was a tough morning. It was nice to, I mean, Kevin Harlan called in, Ian Eagle had called in. These are great men, great broadcasters, and sharing their history and their memories of Jim. It shows you just how much of a people person he really was and how much Browns fans are going to miss him.
Thursday night, Sunday night football, Chris Collinsworth even had nice words because that was his first partner in the booth to do an actual network game. It was Jim Donovan, and you can see the video, and it's incredible how young Chris Collinsworth, how just young he looks. It's straight off the football field, really. And it was truly clear that people around the league, I mean, they meant it. They knew about Jim. They talked about Jim. And it was so unfortunate that he wasn't able to start the year with the team. And you knew there was a certain gravity to that. You knew that obviously when he didn't show up, couldn't attend the ceremony at the stadium when his name went up, that hurt because we knew deep down inside, and you know, you almost didn't want to ask. You know, you got to a point where you're like, you didn't know what to say. You didn't know what to do. So it was very sad. I echo those sentiments.
Here is Mike Tirico and Chris Collinsworth yesterday remembering Jim Donovan, audio courtesy of NBC Sports.
All of us in the sports casting world saddened loss of Jim Donovan to cancer. Voice of the Cleveland Browns on radio for many years, but your first TV partner here at NBC.
First partner ever, just so immensely talented and loved, but one of the sweetest guys you'll ever meet, and he will be sorely missed.
He dedicated himself entirely to that job, and he was the sports director for WKYC, obviously for many years, and obviously took great pride. But he had immersed himself completely in being the voice of the Browns. I mean, to leave NBC Sports and doing national games, and I know that NBC had lost the rights, and he could go. They eventually lost the rights, and he could have gone to CBS or wherever he wanted to, because once you're calling games at NBC, one of the three major broadcasters out there, network broadcasters out there, four actually. You're probably good to go. And he stepped away from that to be the voice of the Browns in 99. And he's been dedicated to Browns fans ever since. That is a job where you have a relationship with the fans. And it's not a dedication to the team as much as it is a dedication to the fans and giving them the truth, but also being able to paint the picture as great as Jim could, being able to describe it. The emotion, you could tell, it wasn't just a deep voice in a suit. It was a person who cared. It was a person who really cared about Browns fans and became a quintessential part of Cleveland. For us personally, I'm sure you share the same thing. With Danny gone a couple of weeks ago and with Les gone a couple of years ago, it's just, you know, your teachers are going. And so it becomes a more difficult thing over time.
Well, just everybody we watched or heard. And I was telling my wife yesterday, I'm like, this is like the seventh one of these shows we've had to do. And we go over it every time we start, me and you off the air. Like, man, it was, you know, Les and Fred McLeod and Michael Stanley and Joe Tate, Triv. I mean, over and over again, it's too frequent, to be honest. It's really too frequent. Now, maybe it's just because these guys lasted as long as they did, and it was terrific that they were able to have the extensive, lengthy careers that they did. So we did have a chance, you know, to see them so long. We were able to put off having to celebrate their lives for as long. And my mind went to the same place you did. It's like, man, how many of these shows? Yeah. But at the same time, it's in a way, I don't want to put a damper. I want to think about just how much when we think about nostalgia and like why I got into this for a career, but not just getting into this for a career, just why you're a sports fan. And like, if you are of a certain age in this town, I mean, the curly haired guy from Boston doing the sports, that eventually you got to earn that acceptance. And he certainly did. And I just remember when I was young, and I knew I wanted to do this at a very early age in some capacity. And I saw Jim Donovan doing, I would always say Beasley Reese. I always remember him doing games with Beasley Reese in the national games. And I would always watch the games go, man, this is no disrespect to Beasley, but I'm like, man, Jim Donovan should be doing the biggest games in the country. Like he was on a rocket ship. How young was he when he started out on CBS and then got the Olympic duties?
Very young.
With Bob Costas. And he was a member, a select few that got the opportunity to do that. And you're right. When NBC lost the NFL, he absolutely could have gone anywhere and done it. And that was the other thing. When I was young, there were so few Clevelanders that I was seeing kind of carry that torch. There was like Vince Cellini. I think Bob Lee was on ESPN News. And I'm like, where are all the Cleveland guys? Well, Jim could have been one of those. He just obviously clearly was not only content, but absolutely loved doing it here and being able to cover sports. One other thing, I was at Akron. on Saturday, and they rushed to get a message up on the video board. And I was talking to some of the higher ups there, and they're like, people have no idea. Like, Jim covered us like we were Ohio State. And that really meant something to those people at Akron. And I just thought that was so cool. Like, he would take time out of his day to just catch up with the people at Akron. And I'm sure he was doing the same with Kent State, John Carroll, and Baldwin Wallace. Like, to me, that was really, really cool to hear that.
Yeah, it was, the way he taught things, I think people don't realize how in tune he was with people and media. He listened to a lot of sports talk radio, and he would always open up a conversation going, hey, did you hear that failure in Mass the other day? Like, and that's how he would do it, because he would listen on his phone. And on the horse farm, he'd be riding around on the tractor on Saturdays, like during home weeks and stuff like that. He'd be riding around doing what they do on a horse farm, and he would be listening to play-by-play on his phone, on his apps of different places around the country. So he knew about guys who were doing play-by-play that people here would never, ever think of. You know, radio guys from across the Big Ten, across the country, the things that he did, the things that he heard. And he was, the one regret I will always have about Jim is that he never did his own talk show. Yeah, he was always had such strong, great opinions.
Thing.
Yep, you know the same thing I do. He had such strong, great opinions. He had a way of doing it. He would have been fantastic. That's the only regret of all the great things Jim ever did. I'm glad I told him. I was like, man, I wish you would have done it. I really, really, really wish that at some point. I know his schedule was very, very difficult for a long time. It's like, man, if he could have done 2 hours in a midday somewhere at any of the stations from the course of the time he got here to now, I mean, it would have made it that much better. It would have made it that much better. But he was a true gift to Cleveland fans.
And by the way, he was a guy that, especially today in a sanitized world of sports where local, you know, the owners, the teams, they obviously want positive coverage. Well, Jim would give you the positive coverage if you earned it.
Yeah.
And if you didn't earn it, he wasn't going to give you cheap shots. He was not going to have an agenda or anything like that. I mean, my God, he was the play-by-play guy for an 0-16 team and a 1-15 team, and those are back-to-back years. And yet, he found a way to make those broadcasts fun, and he gave out tough love, I think it was fair to say,
yeah,
because that's what it was. It was love for the Cleveland Browns, but it was tough. But I think even ownership and the organization was like, it's Jim Donovan. If we didn't earn the Homer call, we're not going to get the Homer call. And that to me will always stick with me. He was able to do that and not lose that trust to the fans.
That day, who was that kicker went down there against Miami and missed like the four?
Parkey.
Parkey. And guess what? He missed it. Like, just, you don't get that. You're not going to get that.
He missed it.
You're not going to get that anywhere else. And it was just him and Doug and their relationship for years is something that young people will never understand. I hate to tell you. Hopefully you can go back and listen to some of it. But to be there in the moment with Browns fans, whether you're driving down the highway, you were in the stadium, if you're in the backyard having to do what you had to do, that relationship, that'll never be duplicated. No offense to Andrew and Nathan, and they do a great job. They know that. It'll never be duplicated between those two again. That was something that was truly special for a long time. Browns winners yesterday, Tom McCarthy, Ross Tucker on the TV broadcast. They said the energy just felt different, especially Ross Tucker. He had that to say. But you had a game where, boy, it was crazy. Kyle Hamilton dropped that interception, popped in and out of his hands. You had Jameis threw one right to somebody in the end zone.
In the end zone, yeah.
And Ross Tucker had quipped, he's like, geez, it was like he was aiming for him. Jameis ended up for 334 and three touchdowns in this football game. And I got to tell you, it seemed everybody on the defense was together. Everybody in the offense was together. Evan Moore and Jerry Jeudy and Cedric Tillman still a water heater? Do I have to take that back?
Maybe. I mean, this is two games. This is two games now. One with One with a bit of Deshaun, and I think it was
99 yards and two touchdowns.
This is the thing that I've been saying forever when I've called our receivers Jags as much as I have, is because every game around the NFL, there are guys each week, because I don't play fantasy football, where I'm like, I've never heard of that guy, he has 100 yards. Buffalo had a new one yesterday, a guy that I don't really pay attention to, 100 yards. And I'm like, it's never us. It's never the Browns. Well, they opened up the offense yesterday. They were very aggressive. They got a good bit of fortune without the corners. The starting corners were out. So if ever there was a chance to take advantage, they were scrambling there, Baltimore, to field a secondary. And our guys, all of a sudden, were getting the football. They were getting the football. I mean, Jerry Jeudy had yards after the catch for the first time I've ever seen. It was amazing. It was amazing. And obviously Tillman and Elijah Moore, I'm like, oh, they're going to trade him.
So do I have
he's improving the draft stock, the draft capital stock.
Do I have to come out and ask it? Do I have to come out and ask it? Do I have to come out and ask the question right off?
I don't even think you do. I think people know.
Would you know who the problem?
I don't think you have to ask a question.
Well, wait a minute. Kevin Stefanski was the play caller up until now. Then it was Ken Dorsey calling plays.
Yeah, I didn't notice anything different.
People holding on to that argument. Well, hold on to that argument.
I didn't notice. What looked to me, it looked like a page out of last year's Joe Flacco playbook. So it didn't matter to me who was calling the plays.
A lot of 12 personnel.
Yes.
Some under center. A little bit of 13. Too. They had three tight ends out there a couple times. Yeah.
So it reverted right back to the offense we saw with Kevin Stefanski that was so successful last year. So kudos to everybody involved for being able to do that.
Better.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they got the ball out.
And they had some chunk running plays, even though Chubb ended up at 3.3 per carry. I think some of that was there were obvious run situations. They bottled them up later, but overall, they got chunk running plays.
He looks good, by the way. He looks good.
Well, he's doing the Chubb thing where there was a play 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. They touched him, and he spun and got back to line of scrimmage. There was another
one. Lean forward and get something, yeah.
There was another one where he looked bottled up maybe 2 yards past the line of scrimmage, and he got 7 on that play. And I'm like, those are the Chubb runs that aren't going to make the highlight reel that are what makes him so special.
Yeah. He looked good yesterday. I thought that
he might not have the explosiveness right now, and we're hoping that that is something that comes back. But he has a lot of the quintessential Chubb moments where I'm like, he made something out of nothing there. That's incredible.
So I want to know, was the problem Watson?
Yeah.
216-474-0092.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be dismissive. I just thought everybody would have that same takeaway.
I can't just put it on him and say that's it. I will tell you guys this. That's my thought. But, all right, who's calling plays? Ken Dorsey was calling plays, even though it looked a lot like a Stefanski. It's almost like Stefanski in the first 7 games was trying to call Ken Dorsey's offense.
Yeah.
And now it looked like Ken Dorsey was calling a Stefanski offense.
Well, then I choose this option over the first option.
Because this one had success against a good football team that had won 5 in a row coming into this game. They were 5-2 coming in. They won 5 in a row and put themselves at the top of the AFC. I think it left with more questions from football standpoints. I think it left with people with more questions than answers about what this is, because it's one game. It's one game. It's a quality win over an extremely quality opponent. But it also says, all right, who was making the decision? Was Kevin actually telling the truth on Deshaun Watson giving them the best chance to win?
No chance.
Were players playing for Deshaun Watson? Did they or did they not care for him? And that was the reasoning that things didn't go well. Was it that Deshaun Watson was just scared in the pocket, was not comfortable in the pocket, had to bail out before he was bailing out because he was taking so many hits? By the third quarter, I was saying he was running himself into sacks in football games. I mean, these are just a few questions that come off the top of your head, Anthony.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, I think you should be careful saying what you say now, because there will be tape getting ready for next week against the Chargers.
Now, they will
line up and play defense. So I'm still hesitant to say this is all on Deshaun. He's bad at football. This is a waste. It feels that way. I ain't going to lie to anybody. It seemed like those three wide receivers and David Njoku, they looked like they were left. They finally got off the island, and they could go and make plays and create again. Elijah Moore was a missing person.
Yeah.
Except for his father tweeting. Other than that, he was a missing person for the first 7 weeks of this season, and then he's showing up yesterday. Go ahead.
It was all different. I mean, obviously, DeJuan Jones looked like a massive upgrade at left tackle over Jed, even though DeJuan had his problems this year. not yesterday. I mean, it was a lot better. You know, he had a penalty at left tackle. I mean, you almost expect something like that with a
guy
playing that.
He didn't look like a saloon door, though.
Right.
No, he didn't.
Right. So,
no, he didn't.
So he, now again, there'll be tape on this. And so I don't know. You're right. It's fair to say that they still could have a terrible year. The offense could still be rough. They're still going to make trades. I mean, Za'Darius Smith, I said yesterday, played so well yesterday, they might have improved draft capital by an entire round.
Yeah.
Some people texted me and said, delete that tweet immediately. But I'm just sitting here thinking, desperate teams. Elijah Moore is a guy that we talked about on a trade market. If he had any market whatsoever, he improved it yesterday.
So are you still thinking trades?
Yeah.
Do I still have to think trades?
Yeah, because they have to be so perfect the rest of the year. And does a team quarterback by Jameis Winston ever
so then
the whole offense was a showcase game?
So this is hold on.
No, I don't. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'm just you're listing all these people that have improved their draft capital.
Well, next
off
Sunday,
one game.
Next Sunday changes face, because obviously they're all must wins. But is it a must win and must look good? Like, if they go out there and they win 27-3 against the Chargers or something like that, I find it hard to believe that people are going to go, oh, yeah, trade all these picks, because then they're going to be 3-6, and then people are going to start looking at the schedule a little bit differently.
If their record wasn't 2-6, if they had done anything else than what they had done to this point, then obviously I would say, well, let's wait and see. The problem is the trade deadline is next Thursday?
Yeah, next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. So the trade line is there. The trade is there. And you know, the Browns are trying to have a smart, honest assessment of their football team, especially JOK, Denzel Ward, not going to play. They're 2.5-point dogs this week. Like, yesterday was so much fun. When Jameis is your quarterback, what is the likelihood of perfect, which is what they have to be? They don't have to win every game the rest of the way.
Not very.
But they've, like, I think the percentages had them at a 1% chance. Like, that's why. I'm just trying to be honest about it.
I just don't think that anybody around the league is going to go, oh, we want all these players now. I mean, Za'Darius is probably the one guy that's still on the roster that's legitimately, you know, we've had this fun with, what if you get 2 first for Miles? That's not going to happen, right? I mean, Za'Darius is the one guy. People aren't going to go, Elijah Moore is a real football player now.
Well, what
off of one game.
But I agree with you there. But what about the other one, the other big name, Jameis? What if another playoff team needs a starting quarterback to get them to a certain point?
It's a conversation we have to have.
Their quarterback gets put out for the year by this Sunday.
Going back to the immediate question, and we're going to obviously get through this through the next 4 hours as well, is I just find it a little bit on my own end to be a little bit irresponsible to say everything is fixed now that Deshaun Watson is gone. I can't say they had a really good game yesterday. They played really well. But I just need to halt it a moment. The offense changed. The quarterback changed. Things are different on tape. It was a great game. But I can't say everything was just fixed because he's gone. They go out there and they play really well next Sunday. There's going to be a different conversation I have to have. But that's just how I'm feeling right now. But damn, it looked good yesterday. 216-474-0092. We'll get to some of you guys coming up here in a bit. Joe Thomas, the great one, the legend, the Hall of Famer. He will talk about his memories of the great Jim
Dyke. Like.
Tell me likey.
I'm liking it.
I like it a lot.
No like.
He doesn't like you.
I don't like you either.
You're tacky and I hate you.
Like or no like.
But I definitely knew what I liked, and I definitely knew what I didn't like.
A lot of likes to go around yesterday, over the weekend for the most part, and I thought it was an awesome scene in that Browns locker room after that big win, considering the moment, the tough news that really spread like wildfire Friday night into Saturday morning on the death of Jim Donovan. So very cool. They had to win that game. Just felt like they had to win that game so we could have moments like this from the Browns locker room from head coach Kevin Stefanski.
I told you guys I would love nothing more than to give this game ball
to the family
of Jim Donovan.
Hell yeah.
Right. Hell yeah.
Jim loved the Cleveland Browns. He loved you guys. Okay, we love him back. We will be there for his family. This one's for Jim.
It was terrific. Audio courtesy of the Cleveland Browns. And Kenny, you said they ended up taking the game ball to Donovan's family. Just awesome. Just all the way around.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. And again, Jim was the best friend that Browns fans had. And I thought that it was a very nice thing for them to do. It was a very nice thing for Kevin to make sure of it. And it was just it was a great ending to a really tough day for everybody.
Without a
for
doubt.
For everyone.
Without a doubt. Also, another
Lima Lights.
Jameis Winston, 27 of 41, 334 yards, had 3 touchdown passes, only sacked twice, moved well in the pocket, did not run around with his head cut off, didn't show the rust that sometimes quarterbacks have after a layoff. Rust.
Who called the plays?
Yesterday was...
I have to be honest and present another side.
Yeah,
fair and balanced coverage on
that
the fan.
That was Ken Dorsey. So you know what? Well, we'll get to that in a second. Here's Jameis after the game having a little bit of fun and just Jameis being Jameis.
There's a white boy from Detroit that I really admire named Eminem. He said, "You only get one shot. Do not miss your chance to blow. This opportunity lasts once in a lifetime." And I know I got a quote, you know, Eminem, he from Detroit, he right up the road. But, man, I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that the Lord provided me with this opportunity. I'm grateful for my teammates, my coaches, and these amazing fans.
All right. Okay.
You know you're going to get this as long as Jameis is here. You are going to be getting the great sound bites.
It's a great soundbite. I did not hear that beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
That is something.
And you know what? Since you said maybe for fair and balance, we should
I'm
do it.
Alive.
Ken Dorsey, the much maligned Ken Dorsey.
I know what it's just. What rapper did he?
He did not.
Oh.
Now, he did not.
Snow.
But we also got.
Informer.
Yes.
We also got our conclusion once and for all. Was it Booth or no Booth? It was
Booth.
Booth
for Ken Dorsey.
It was the Booth.
Yeah.
Did that win the poll on Friday? Was it we did
it
Booth or no Booth?
Did you see the touchdown celebration though? It was a very muted fist pump. Like yay! it was very muted because
he knows
what they did in the production meeting. Ross Tucker and then brought it up. They're like, "Hey, we got a camera on you."
Yeah.
We know what happened last time. Like yeah, he was very cognizant that there was a camera there.
Also, thank goodness they won the game because
I'm alike.
I don't know if after a loss, Myles Garrett wearing the Terminator mask that he showed up in would have gone over well. How awesome was that? Okay, how much money do you think he spent on that? My estimate was $100,000.
$100,000.
Oh, this is Hollywood.
What?
Did you hear the story? He had somebody in Hollywood.
Oh,
make that so like that could be used for a movie. That stuff costs a lot of money.
Okay, never mind. Okay, maybe.
I would say six
He's
figures.
Good for the money, right?
Maybe $100,000.
I know there's a detail. Mitch, find the details. I know Schefter had it.
Well, did he put it out on Twitter or anything?
Yeah.
Or on Instagram?
Yeah.
If he put it out on Instagram, it might have been a lot less than you think. Did he credit the person who made it or anything like that?
I know Schefter had the details of somebody that works in the movie business.
Put it out on Tame.
Well, now I'm going to have to find him and ask him on Wednesday.
Yeah. And you know what? David Njoku got robbed of that pass on the sidelines with the quick review. It was odd. Stefanski wanted to throw the challenge flag. Ross Tucker was all over it. He's like, no, don't throw that. That'd be a waste of a challenge. I don't even think they would let him throw the challenge on that the way that went down.
But it was Booth review.
Yeah, the Booth review. But Njoku also had another big catch in that game. He ended up with 5 for 61. And no better day to do it than on
Lima Likes.
International Tight Ends Day.
It's just Kenny. National.
Oh, it's just national?
Yeah, if you're playing tight end in Germany, we don't care about you.
So Munich, yesterday. Joe Thomas would not be given
Didn't
a shout-out?
No. I found out the original date of National Tight Ends Day.
I was hoping for the origin because I think I had heard it for the first time last
year.
Is
this one of these, like, there's a real day, but we celebrate a different day because that works for our calendar better?
After a game, Jimmy Garoppolo had said, what's it like, National Tight Ends Day? Because it was Garrett Celek. Brought 2 defenders with him while scoring a touchdown. He was the tight end.
And so he coined the term and it took off?
George Kittle had answered, yeah, it's National Tight Ends Day. It's a holiday. And then it took off.
No
2018
kidding.
Was the original National Tight Ends Day.
Okay, so this is something that's lived. We're on year 6 of this. Are we going to get this for any other positions? Are we going to do it in other sports? Are we going to have National Power Forward Day?
We did have National Kicker Day. National Kicker Week.
We did Kicker Week
on this show.
Yeah. And to this day, we should have been nominated for an award. We weren't. What the hell, Andy? That was an award-winning week, and we got nothing. No Marconis, nothing. Nobody else had the guts.
Some say it was checked out. Some say it was checked out and ready to go on to Atlanta.
I have a stat from before Sunday Night Football, which
Beautiful.
Featured George Kittle in it. So that's one of the big tight ends on National Tight Ends Day. Weeks 1 to 7, tight ends were targeted 197 times. Week 8 alone, before last night's game, 211. They had more targets yesterday than they had the whole first part of the season combined. They had 1889 receiving yesterday and only 1434 weeks 1 through 7.
Oh, that seems like a concerted effort.
Yeah.
It seems like behind the scenes, the tight end union got together to make sure that they
That's from NBC.
Big tight end is getting involved.
Yep.
That's right. That's what this election's all about.
Yeah.
Tight ends, the next frontier.
You're right about that.
Lima likes.
Folks, you're 3-0 Cleveland Cavaliers. They are dominating. The best point differential in the entire Eastern Conference. They have mopped the floor with the competition. And
Lima likes.
Evan Mobley. He is shooting 42.9% from three-point range. Is this the leap? The fabled leap that we had been talking about, Kenny.
I'm heavily distracted by this video that Myles Garrett put out. It was 20 hours ago, which is Judgment Day 2095. And it is very cinematic.
It's unbelievable.
It's called a Myles Garrett production. He definitely spent over $100,000 to do all this. If we're talking about production value,
he should have had someone like Dustin Hopkins dress up like T-2000, though.
The original,
and chase him.
You're right.
The original Halloween cost $325,000. This is at least a third of that. This is unbelievable.
Yeah, they spray painted an old William Shatner mask.
Well, you know what? We always wonder. We always wonder, what would we blow our money on if we got to a point where we had so much money that we could blow it on something we really want to blow it on? I think Myles Garrett has his answer.
Yep.
Because the decorations at his home, I mean, okay, that's not a dent. They'll never make a dent. There's nothing he could do unless he made it a theme park to really spend real money on it.
And you guys want to sit there and yell at me last week because I said, if you're going to trade Miles, you got to talk to him about it first. You can't just trade him.
Yeah.
I can't believe the guy in the afternoon. I can't believe Ken. When did he get so soft? Guy does this.
He has $100,000 worth of mask on delivery here.
Well, I just wonder
all the comments are nothing but Browns fans. How much we love Miles. Yeah, you go ahead. You trade him. See how that works out without asking him.
One last question for you guys. What's the biggest 50-50 raffle you have had at a high school game?
Oh, at a high school game?
I don't really know right off the top of my head.
Well, we were over 600 for the famed Super Bowl between Avon and Avon.
$600?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Marion Local and Coldwater.
I've heard of them.
They had their 50-50 raffle on Friday night. The winner took home $22,480.
Wait, that wasn't the total pot? That was just the half?
No, that would be half of the total pot. 50-50.
What game was this?
This was Marion Local, who I think had won, 58?
Those are D6 or D7s?
Yeah, this is definitely something Ozark's going on here.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. Reckless speculation.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's not. For Netflix to put that one out. It's called Marion Local.
I mean, at that much money, you got
a big city guy moves to the town, all of a sudden all this money starts coming through the 50-50 raffle.
I mean, do you remember what was the bar? Was it the Grayton Tavern?
Grayton Road Tavern.
What did that pot get up to?
Yeah, that was millions.
That was the Queen of Hearts,
right? Yeah, they had to have heavy-duty law enforcement
With a lot of other bars, though. They just held it at Grayton Road Tavern.
It's just crazy when you see, like, this small-town stuff with that much money.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling they didn't do one of those, hey, I'm donating it back to help the program. Ah, not at $22,480. That's it for Lima Likes.
Well, this is nuts. Natural grass field, the whole thing. Oh, this is beautiful. This is small town Ohio at its finest. Yeah,
well, you can afford to have a new grass field put in every week.
Yeah, it might be Ozark.
We're in 22.
This looks very small town rural Ohio. Where are you getting 22,000 on the half? How's that going? It's an interesting premise.